Do you want to go in? Any problem?
I haven't thought of one yet. Too many to bring them up anymore. Too many to bring them up anymore. Well, I had a question from way in the beginning, actually. It had to do with something you said about in bhakti, one makes a division, and unless one, and for instance in the case of happiness, unless one is aware that they're happy, then the purpose of bhakti is to be aware
yeah.
of happiness. And I remember reading in Krishnamurti once that he said, I can almost remember the exact words, if you think that you're happy,
you're not happy.
That's
obvious. So, first that statement must be corrected. That it's not that we make the division. Bhakti recognizes the already existing division. When you open your mouth, when you open your eyes, when you open your mouth, when you begin to think, the division is already there. You are caught in the division. As long as the mind functions, as long as the ego sense functions, division is made. Now, normally, we are caught up in this division. We are not aware of it, but we are making the division. Because we are living a more or less automatic life. Just like, for instance, when you drive along the road, you are not even aware that you are driving on one side of the road and not on the whole road. That you don't have freedom to move right and left. You are used to it. So that as soon as you jump into the car, you drive on the right side of the road. So that when I come here, I am puzzled. The division has been made by the mind, but you are not aware of it at all. Bhakti recognizes that division, and therefore bhakti is called division. Bhakti is both division and devotion. And it does not make a division, but it recognizes it is there. The division is there. As soon as I open my eyes, I, you, the division has come, has arisen. If I do not recognize it and allow it to exist, it is not cancelled. It's not cancelled. It's there. So, how do I put an end to that division? By making it, by becoming aware of it. When I become aware of it, I become aware of the division. And then I become aware of the pain caused by the division. I become aware of the problems created by the division. And lastly, I become aware that the division is not real, but somehow it has been created by the functioning of the mind, by the functioning of the ego sense. When these things are put together, when that the division is painful, it causes innumerable problems, and number two, that this is not the reality but fictitious, it's been created by the mind. When these two things come together, it explodes and the division disappears. That division comes into devotion. I think I am happy is a silly expression, a terribly silly expression. I think I am happy, I think I am unhappy. It is the thought that thinks I am happy, thinks it is happy. It is the thought that thinks I am unhappy, thinks I am unhappy. It has nothing whatsoever to do with what is. This is true of everything in life. It's merely thinking I am happy, thinking I am unhappy is of no use at all. See?
When you say become aware of the pain, become aware of the pain in...
Become aware of the pain of division. Pain caused by division. Pain caused... The problems caused by the division.
And in becoming aware of that, is it becoming aware of it in sort of a consciousness, or is it... Like
no, we are not talking about consciousness. Consciousness is a little further out.
What I'm really asking is, some psychologist things say to go into it, you know, to go into the pain and feel it and all of this.
Yes, that means you are... How can I feel something? I do not feel this palm at all. And now I am feeling it.
Oh.
It is only when there is duality that the feeling possible. So instead of sitting and thinking, I am in sorrow, in pain. I am not in pain, I am stepping back to sort of become aware of it.
I see.
Now I touch that pain, and when it is painful, I don't touch it anymore. For a moment you sort of pull yourself away from it and come into contact with it. And then, it is then that you realize that this is, this division, which, the contact which presupposes division, is what gives you pain. It is contact with pain that gives you pain. But that contact is made possible and inevitable by the division. And therefore, in order to avoid the pain, I should avoid the contact with pain. And in order to avoid contact with pain, I must avoid the division that makes the contact inevitable and possible. It is at that stage one realizes that whether you call it pain or whether you call it pleasure, whether you call it good or evil, whether you call it happiness or unhappiness, whether you call it love or hate, all these are nothing but... You don't have so many things hidden in you. It is just one thing. Consciousness, in which energy is inherent. And in that consciousness, there is this energy which is inherent, and movement, motion, is inherent in energy. Is natural to energy. And it is this motion that takes place in consciousness, which is interpreted by the mind as happiness at one time, unhappiness at one time, love at one time, hate at one time, etc., etc. Then you ask the simple question, when these changes do not take place in the consciousness, what is consciousness? Or, same thing, you enter into the pain, you get through the pain. Pain is a word. When the word is discarded, what is the truth? Pleasure is a word. When that word is showed off, what is the truth? Love is a word. Push that away. Hate is a word. Push that away. When all these words have been eliminated, you come face to face with the truth that there is nothing but consciousness, and there is a little bit of movement in that consciousness. And that movement of energy in consciousness is called thought. Thought is a word. Then you are really looking for truth, searching for truth, and perhaps discover the truth. The rest is all humbug.
Remember, I made a comment one time relative to truth. What is truth today may not be truth tomorrow.
So that's not true. That statement is true. But what is called truth today, if it ceases to be truth tomorrow, it is no longer true. It's not truth. It wasn't truth in the first place. If it was truth, it would have remained true.
I don't recall what the conversation was about, but I do recall just the statement, and I have pondered it many times, wondering just the meaning behind it.
Again, one has to define one's terms. And truth is defined as that which is true at all times. They do not even go to all that extent. They merely point out your daily experience. I am living in the ashram. It's true now, but it is not true when I am asleep. It's already contradicted, not even next year or 50 years later. It's already contradicted. I am Swami Venkateshananda. This seems to be the truth now. But when I am fast asleep, there is no awareness at all that I am Swami Venkateshananda. So that again, even that is false. That which is true only partially is untrue.
It's not just the ego that is untrue, it's also the personality.
What's the difference? Yeah. What's the difference? It's an intriguing story told of of which I'm very fond of it. So we might as well share it. It's the story of a king, and I really don't know the source. I've heard it so often that I really almost see it as true. It is said of King Janaka. I think you have the book here, Ashtavakra Samhita. Ashtavakra Samhita, beautiful, very inspiring booklet, tremendously inspiring, very much like your Vasishtha. And the story, the two characters in the story are King Janaka, the father-in-law of Brahma, perhaps, and a great sage called Ashtavakra. Ashtavakra means, Ashta is eight, Vakra means crooked. It is said that this person was born with eight twists in his body. I don't know how. Everything was crooked. His neck was twisted, his arms were twisted, his legs were twisted, everything was twisted. How did that happen? His mother was expecting him. And the father was a great pandit, Vedic scholar. And the old man was reciting from the Vedas. He made a mistake. The baby in the fetus said, "Ah, wrong. Stop." Story. The baby in the fetus said, "No, that's wrong. Shut up." The father got all angry. "My goodness, this little boy starts teasing me even before he is born. You crooked fellow, you'll be born crooked with eight twists in your limbs, and so you're born crooked." These are two characters involved. King Janaka was also supposed to have been a very enlightened person. Probably this was before enlightenment. He had a peculiar disease. It made him sleep 12 hours a day. 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. he slept. Every day. That's number one. Symptom number two of the disease. As soon as his head touched the pillow, he started dreaming. Till he woke up in the morning. So, 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. he dreamt every day. Number three, he dreamt the same dream every day, which is unusual, but that's the disease. He dreamt the same dream, and all the 12 hours, that was the dream. And what was the dream? that he was a beggar. This emperor, Janaka, dreamt every night for 12 hours that he was a beggar. six p.m. to 6 a.m. Can you imagine it? And this went on for a few months, couple of years. So one morning, the palace musicians started singing, and there was dancing, and there was all sorts of things. And his handmaiden, they had the towel and then the basin of the hot water and the toothbrush and everything ready. And they stood near his bed and started singing gently to wake him up, 5:45. 6 o'clock, the emperor's head rolled a little bit. Who are you? Give me food, he said. It is still not quite six. Why, a minute before six? I'm hungry, can you give me some food? He said, Your Majesty, we are your servants. Majesty's servants? Where am I? When he did that, they all dropped whatever they had and ran away. They thought this man has gone, lost his mind. He looked around, it's true, there is a palace, lovely bed and beautiful people. And I've got royal robes, it's true. But then 6 p.m., suddenly all these things disappear, and then he becomes an emaciated, old, silly old beggar, going and begging from door to door. It's funny. And every day when he woke up, he became more and more and more puzzled. And he asked his minister, is this true or is that true? Am I a beggar dreaming I am a king from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m.? Or am I a king who is dreaming that he is a beggar from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m.? Exact 12 hours. Who answers the question? They thought it's impossible. You are king, but then 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. I am beggar. Nobody could answer this question, so they all ran away. And sort of this news spread in the capital. He was functioning all right, yes? 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. he is still the emperor. So he functioned as emperor. There was no problem. He didn't have to abdicate. But he still had this problem within himself. Is this true or is that true? One day this Ashtavakra, he couldn't even walk, so he was dragging himself on his bottom and appeared at the palace door. I would like to see the king, emperor. I believe he has got some problem, I can fix it. And the security man, he said, you? Yeah, me. I'll go and talk to him and I'll fix him. They consulted with one another. They said, maybe he looks to be a nice man with 8 curves. Send him in. And he sat near the throne, and Janaka said, the king, the emperor asked, is that true or is that true? And this chap looked straight into his eyes and said, neither. This is a temporary reality, that is another temporary reality. What underlies both these is real, you. That's it. Who is it that dreams and who is it that is awake now? The person, the emperor was cancelled in the dream, and the beggar was cancelled in the waking state. But what was common to both? Consciousness was common to both. That's what you are. Tough, that one. But the build-up of the story is very nice. To bring out this wonderful truth, the build-up of the story is very nice. So that which is contradicted in another time, space, or circumstance is not true. And what is eternally true is what people call God. Why not call it? And that is why it's called Satchidananda. That which exists and it's usual to say which knows it exists, but may not be quite that. That which exists and in which consciousness is inherent, which is non-different from consciousness. That's the only truth. And so even that, if you are able to enter into the whole thing, as you suggested, entering into the pain, entering into the pleasure, entering into what is called happiness, entering into what is called unhappiness, entering into the emotion called love, entering into the emotion called hate, and see if there is some truth in it other than I think I love you, I think I hate you. If I do not think I'm in pain, is there pain? No. When they give you some anesthesia, the mind is paralyzed, the brain is paralyzed, and so there is no pain. Which means, if I do not think I am suffering, I do not suffer. But not thinking on a superficial level. Huh? And so one must know what thinking means. Not merely superficially sort of, you know, I am thinking, this is another problem. Are you thinking? Or do you think you are thinking?
It's not just ignoring it, it's really...
It's really getting into it. Yeah. Getting into it. The same thing in the yogasana practice also. The left arm lies heavily. It's not relaxed. And so when you want to relax, the yoga teacher tells you to make it tense and then let go. Then now it is relaxed. Before it was merely ignored. When you tense, you are holding it. You are touching it. Mentally you are touching it as you make it tense, heavy. Now it is relaxed.
In that word, Satchidananda, the word Ananda, but there's sort of, to me, there's three related questions. People think of a unified state as, people think, first of all, think of Ananda as being something positive and not something neutral. But intellectually, positive and negative are not possible in a unified state. Therefore, there seems to be an inherent contradiction. And also, Shivananda talks about five different sorts of Ananda, related to the different chakras. What is that?
I don't know about chakras. I know that there are...
I was reading Kundalini book and he said that he was talking about different sorts of Ananda.
Yeah, yeah. So I know that? Of one I don't know about that. I know there is a statement in the Upanishad of the human ananda and the deva ananda and etc. etc. 5 or 6 different types. The same thing, like God love. You make a distinction between lower love and higher love, human love and divine love. First of all, there is a semantic problem. That is, it is possible to have a sort of happiness at the human level, at the duality level. I am happy with you. I am happy in this circumstance, in this condition. I am happy today. That's possible. Then, when the duality comes to an end, you see that at the same time, all sorrow comes to an end, all unhappiness comes to an end. And so, obviously, that there is no unhappiness in non-dual, in the non-dual state.
There's no happiness either.
No, wait a moment. But then, when I wake up from sleep, had a very nice sleep. Wonderful, supreme, real glorious, divine. So, there is a feeling that in that non-dual state of sleep, when even the I consciousness did not exist, something somehow experienced some peace and some happiness. Something somehow experienced. I cannot explain it at all verbally. But non-verbally there is distinctly, it's not a memory, it is the experience of having undergone the experience.
Mm-hmm. But it's still a state of duality. That
no, it was not. I'm quite definite that in the state of deep sleep, there was no duality. Because I had no dualized experience of it at all.
But during that deep sleep, you couldn't say,
Right, I didn't say at all. Therefore, I didn't say I was happy during the deep sleep. But after coming back to waking consciousness, I seem to have an experience of having experienced happiness in sleep, peace in sleep. It is possible, I am merely suggesting that it is possible that since I am harassed by worries and anxieties and so on and so forth, as soon as I wake up, I surmise that in that state of deep sleep, there was great happiness. Possible. But it is also possible that, now, must be very careful not to let the mind react.
Mm-hmm.
It is also possible that since Satchitananda is also Chit, which means consciousness,
mm-hmm.
that consciousness is perhaps able to experience even without dualizing itself. Without dividing itself. It is not an inert substance which needs somebody else to touch it, taste it and experience it. Since it is essentially consciousness, without the need for an object to experience, it's able to experience the bliss in itself.
I think the danger with bhakti is that people get so attached to this feeling of, and you get so attached to that you don't want to go over that boundary.
Yeah. You'll get bored with that also. And it is in the case of those people that they put up all that ladder, that you go to heaven, the kingdom of God, and stay there for some time and then walk in the queue, stand in the queue. Slowly gravitate towards God, etc., etc. That's It's for those people that that kind of salvation was suggested.
Yeah. And it seems very bhakti taken out of context with the rest of the yoga. It seems like a very dangerous thing.
Waste of time. It's nothing, nothing dangerous.
Yeah.
But instead of saying it waste of time, they say that you will have Krama Mukti, slowly you will graduate, you will go to the kingdom of God, and we will all be together there, and we will still have satsang, we will have bhakti yoga class. this is very true.
You were saying yesterday, speaking of the Catholic wake and religion, relative to them, why didn't they say women up there? And it dawned on me later, one reason they don't is because they do have purgatory, and they can all be prayed out of purgatory, so they figure that they all eventually get to heaven. But they first go to purgatory.
Who?
The Catholics believe that those who die first go to purgatory. And it's while they are in purgatory that they need mass said for them to pray them out of purgatory into heaven.
Yeah.
So women as well as men would go to heaven, but they just happen to